I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Never quit. Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Welcome back, everybody, to a Team Never Quit podcast episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, watching, and most importantly, thank you for subscribing. We appreciate that. If you haven't checked us out on YouTube yet, you need to get over there and subscribe to that channel. We got short clips from the show as well as full episodes and some other stuff in the works that should be coming out there soon. And with that said, we can't forget our Patreon community out there as we're leading in here to the Patreon question of the day. You guys ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the strangest place you have ever had a meeting?
A meeting?
Yeah. That was the Patreon question of the day.
Well, that's weird. I don't think I've had a meeting in a weird place.
That's what I was thinking, too. I don't know.
Other than during quarantine,
right.
At the ranch, having meetings like on the porch at the ranch, and Marcus would have like a suit top. And then swim shorts and flip-flops on.
So I had a rally up underwater underneath an aircraft carrier. We had a meeting and a debrief underneath there.
That's
so
weird.
The situation, yeah. It was weird. Yeah, there's a couple of them.
I was hoping there was something like that.
Yeah, underwater. Yeah. We've had them. We have them underwater for sure. And then...
How do you talk to each other?
You can't believe it.
Well, how is it? What do you do?
It's grunts, groans, signals, hand signals, pressure points, pressure on the body to communicate. It's, like it's a different kind of sign language altogether. JJ and I were talking about this the other day. I was like, man, you know that they spent underwater for 5 years, 6 to 8 hours. I mean, we got everything done. We lived. I couldn't believe it.
So is that why you grunt at me? You're actually trying to talk to me?
I think it happens unnaturally. When the lights go out and it's completely dark. And
you just go there.
I fall asleep underwater. I mean, that's a thing. And then, yeah, I'm just trying to communicate.
I'm supposed, wow, you're not getting them? I'm supposed to understand those grunts.
Well, I'm hoping after all these years. No. But, yeah, so underwater would be mine.
Okay.
Awesome.
What about you?
Oh, me. Probably the trunk of a car.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's a good one.
We got to hear that story.
Yeah, that's definitely the best. That one. Yeah.
You win.
Yeah. All right. We'll get into that story. All right. Yeah, thank you, we'll Patreon.
Have to hear that. Thank you, Patreon, for that question of the day. Y'all are always out there bringing us interesting questions, and we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Keep it coming, guys. Today, we have a great guest in store. Tracy Walder went from sorority girl to CIA staff operations to stopping biological terror plots worldwide to an author of the book Unexpected Spy, which reveals how she tracked chemical terrorists and searched the world for weapons of mass destruction. Tracy has also shifted from her undercover overseas life in the CIA to working counterintelligence here back in the States for the FBI. And now I believe you're actually teaching. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That is amazing. That is quite the accolade story there, from, I guess, essentially spy to teacher,
FBI agent.
Yeah, FBI agent to teacher. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So we got to hear all about
it's
that.
It's actually great. It's a great story.
Thank you. If
you back up every American life and play it out like it's a script, there's some people down here that have great ones. The outline of your life is amazing to me. And I know a lot of people love here. I mean, they make great movies about stuff like that, actually. So I just want to back it up to how this all starts. Where do you come from?
If you could just back it up to, like, your childhood, where'd you grow up, and that kind of stuff. Okay.
Sure. So, I guess maybe can I just back it up to, like, I guess a question
however
I get.
However you want. Yeah.
A question I get asked a lot that I think will help explain the career path or lack thereof of wanting. You know, I was born in the 70s, and so, you know, growing up, it was a different time. We didn't have, like, pop culture like we do today with Homeland and all those SEAL team shows. Right. We just didn't have that. And so I always get the question, like, did you want to do this? And the answer is no, not in some kind of a rude way, but I really didn't have anything that, like, showed me that this was a career path to have, if that makes any sense.
Sure,
I think
absolutely.
Now, you know, a lot of people know that these are career paths you can explore. So for me, so I was born with a developmental disability called hypotonia. So I still have it. It's low muscle tone. It's like a precursor to cerebral palsy, and they still don't really have a cure for it. So I didn't, like, roll over until I was one. I didn't walk until I was three. So sometimes it's fatal in people because the heart is obviously a muscle. Right. And so, for me though, it was just low muscle tone. And so obviously I began walking and all of that. And I think the doctor was like, well, you know, whatever, she won't be an athlete, but, you know, it's fine. It doesn't affect your brain or anything like that. And so I started in about third grade to be pretty horrifically bullied. Like, kids would trip me on purpose. I'm always going to be a clumsy person. but I don't think people would necessarily know that, like, I have the condition, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was sort of my childhood. I grew up in Southern California. My dad is a former Navy, is a Vietnam vet. Both my grandpas are World War II vets, and both my great grandpas are World War II.
Oh, yeah. So you come from a warrior family.
You come from a stock.
That makes sense. All right, go ahead.
No pressure.
Yeah, right.
and so I think, I don't know that I ever thought the military would be a path for me, because, again, there just weren't a lot of, like, women representation in it. But I just kind of always knew that service was, like, a path for me, whatever that, like, looked like, I guess. And so I was bullied, like, really horrifically, but my dad is a huge, huge history buff. And so he'd always give me books to read, and I just came to really love history. And so my junior year of high school, I had a really influential teacher who sort of helped me come out of my shell, and I decided, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to major in history and I'm going to be just like this teacher. And so I went, I applied to the one school where I went for free because that's where my dad was a professor. So
that's good thinking.
Well, I mean, free tuition. You can't really
pay hey, that, that's right? Great. Yeah. Good thinking.
Yeah. And it, you know, USC is not a cheap school. And so to go there for free, it was pretty awesome. And so I got in and, you know, I guess sort of the rest is history, but if you want, I can talk a little bit about how I decided on.
Oh yeah, we need to hear all that.
Yeah,
we talk about USC too. One of my best friends, a strength coach there now for the football team. So I'm a recently added fan of USC.
So my dad went there, my aunt went there, and my great grandpa went there. So we are like a huge. And my dad is obviously a retired professor from there. So we are big Trojan fam.
I love it.
I'll obviously have to bring up 2005 when University of Texas and that. That's our only thing. That's all I can go to. That's funny. But all right. So you have siblings? Do you have sisters, brothers, or anything?
I have a brother.
Okay. Older or younger?
He is 3 years younger.
Is he in the business too, or did he do different path?
So I take more after my dad. And my brother, he's not feminine by any stretch of the imagination. He is super into math, super into computers, president of his fraternity, lives his best life, uber social, a dude's dude.
Yeah. Love it.
One of them guys, you know, everyone's like, oh, that's cool. He does that. That's cool. That's cool.
A more traditional kind of like lifestyle path, if that makes any sense. He doesn't want anything to do with government work, and it's not a bad thing. That's just who he is. Right. I took more after my dad, I guess, in that sense.
Love it. Okay, so tell us about how you got started into on that path.
So to orient the audience, I don't know how old you all are, but like I grew up with terrorism being Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Waco, like that was my version of terrorism because again, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, right? Not a pre 9/11 world. And so I did not have a lot of exposure to foreign terrorism. Yes, we had bombings in Nairobi, Tanzania, those had happened. But I think for me, you know, when you're young, you're like, oh, that's over there, right? Like I didn't necessarily understand the problem here, if that makes any sense. And yes, we had the World Trade Center bombing in 93. But again, it was not obviously on that sort of broad scale. And Al-Qaeda wasn't even formed until 89, right? So, you know,
I remember them brushing over that.
Mm-hmm. And
I remember them brushing over that. We're the same age. We're 78s too. So I call us 78s. We're born in the 1900s. We're a unique generation.
Gen X.
Yeah, Gen X.
Yes,
right,
Gen X.
And I remember when that happened. I mean, they showed a picture of it, right? But it was just like smoke billowing out of that garage.
Right.
And then
I do not remember the first World Trade Center bombing. I just don't. I don't know where I was at that time, but
they really didn't focus on
it. Yeah, I do remember the Oklahoma City bombing. That was,
I think because I lived in
Texas, like they showed it more. Because
OJ thing went down. That was in the 90s, right?
Like was in Newport Beach, California. And, you know, even there, we weren't really focused. Yes, I remember seeing what happened with the World Trade Center, but like you said, it was just kind of glossed over. We spent a lot of time at Oklahoma City and Waco. You know, it was just, I think we didn't understand it quite yet.
Well, that's a great way of saying that. No, we didn't.
Yeah.
It was before technology as well. I mean, we kind of think it was kind of there, but we're the ones that brought that in.
Yeah.
As soon as we came of age, I didn't get my first phone, I don't think, until we were in the military. That's the early 20s, right?
I didn't get it until I was like 23. Yeah.
I think I was maybe 20 or 21, you know, something. Yeah. And it was big. You know, it was like a big.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it didn't go with you. That's for dang sure.
And my parents being like, do not use this unless you're stuck on the side of the road bleeding.
With the bag phone, right? Too. Like, don't even crank it up. If you crank that thing up.
Because it was so expensive. You know, like for a call.
That's right.
And I just remember that being, you know, that was the thing.
Yeah. I didn't even have that. I had to wait until it was. I think I was 23 or 24. I was born in 79. And I did not have it. I had a child before I had a phone. So I was
a
single mom driving around my baby without a cell phone.
Without a phone.
And everything was fine.
And I would stop at payphones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
The phones were connected to the wall. They just had a long string. All right. So
yeah.
When did you start? Because you're right. Back in the 1900s, they didn't have documentaries. I mean, if you were in front of a TV, it was lucky to get. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I majored in history at USC, right? Like, because I was going to be a high school history teacher. And I was struggling in one of my classes, and I had to keep a really high GPA to keep that full, you know, tuition remission that I had from my dad. And so I went to meet with my professor, who actually was the dean of the entire like liberal arts school. And, you know, he's like, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I was like, I'm a history major. You just teach with that. And he's like, dude, there's other stuff you can do. And he printed me out a list, and I started like doing things that looked interesting on it. And so I interned at a museum. That was actually a lot of fun. I interned for a senator.
I don't think I've ever met anybody who's actually done that.
It was really fun. I would catalog.
I bet it was, right? Intern for a museum.
Yeah. Write those little, you know, blurbs that explain, you know, underneath. I interned for a senator, and I really enjoyed that. But nothing really stuck with me, you know, in terms of wanting to depart from that history path.
Yeah.
I guess to go back a little bit. So I grew up, it's not like this now, but where I grew up, I was really the only person of my religion in my school. And so I knew that I was, I don't want to say different, but I knew people didn't love us, because every time I went into my place of worship, I had to go through a metal detector and there were police officers.
Oh my gosh.
And so I just knew that we were different versus, you know, I'd go to socials at my friends' churches and you just sort of walk right in, right? It wasn't. So I just knew we were different. And I knew the Middle East was this like tumultuous place, but I don't think my parents ever really explained that to me. Yeah. And so I didn't really have an understanding, but I think I was interested because I didn't understand why there was conflict, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so in 1997, I was working out, and CNN did the first and only interview with like a Western news station with Osama bin Laden. And I watched it. And during that interview, he issued his fatwa declaration of war against the U.S. But being like the self-centered 19-year-old, he also issued a declaration of war against Jews. And so I actually am Jewish. And so when I heard that, I thought, oh, that's me. Right. You know, because you're just self-centered and the world revolves around you, I guess, when you're 19. is this why there's problems? Is this guy? Is this guy creating the problems? Right. Like I just didn't understand where it came from. And so I wanted to learn more. And so I know USC is a great school, but again, at the time, which I know might sound silly to some younger folks, like there were not classes you could take in terrorism or national security. And so I took Middle Eastern history. I took intro to Islam. I took international religion. Like I tried to take anything I could to, I guess, learn more about it. And that's when I really became very interested, but I couldn't find anyone to help me. And I didn't know if I was interested in this terrorism thing, like, what do you do with that? Where do you work? Which I know today sounds so silly, but this was like 1998.
Oh, we're the ones that invented that. I mean, even if it was just a thought process in the beginning, we're the ones that had to lay the outline for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there just wasn't, and everyone always thinks it's so silly when I say this, but like that really was the truth of the time. Yeah. Right. And so
how crazy is that to think about that?
Yeah. It's very crazy to think about a pre 9/11 world, I guess, not post, but pre. And so I knew I had heard about this thing called the CIA, and I knew that they did foreign stuff, right? But I'm not sure I associated them with like, we didn't even have a new James Bond, I don't think, at that point. I think it was still Sean Connery, who is obviously an incredible actor, but
awesome.
Like, I don't see myself in that necessarily, right? And so I went to a career fair, and there was a table, the CIA openly recruits at schools.
This
weird, a new thing. And I remember asking the recruiter, I said, do y'all work terrorism? And he's like, oh, that's a very small, you know, group that we have that does that. We're really looking for Russian speakers and Spanish speakers. Yeah. Those are our two AOIs right now.
Because Colombia, right?
Colombia, a little bit of like Guatemala and Honduras, I think, at the time. And then obviously Russia. And I don't speak either of those languages, right? And those weren't areas I was particularly interested in. But I thought, whatever, I'll give you my resume and, you know, whatever, maybe you'll call. And I know like sometimes people are like, she's so flippant about it. I'm not. This is just like how it was at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know any other way to
No,
be
it's
so...
the best way to explain it so people will know if they're getting in it. Because if you explain it any other way, then people are like, well, that could never happen to me. I'm like, well, that's because they
but
didn't
it
say it the way... Yeah, exactly.
Younger than us do not understand how things worked in the late 90s. Like, I graduated in 97 and I had to hand write my college applications.
Yes.
It was, and you had to like do it over and over and over again. Yes. You know, if you wanted to apply to 10 schools, you were filling out 10 packets of and making photocopies of all of your transcripts, you know, all
you didn't
that
have
kind of
time
stuff.
To do anything else. He's always writing something.
Nowadays, because we have a 24-year-old that just graduated from college, there is one website. You fill out one application, and you just click what schools you want it to go to. It's so easy nowadays.
It's called the Common App.
Right?
Is that true? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's so easy. But back then, it was so hard. And a lot of people just didn't do things that were hard.
I mean, it makes sense. And you know, like Marcus was saying, like, I like to share that because, like you said, I wasn't some crazy achiever with connected parents and, you know, all of that. Like, that's not how I got where I got, right? Like, yes, I had a good GPA. I had to, because I didn't, my parents couldn't afford to keep me there, right? And if I didn't, you know, stay there. And so they call, obviously CIA call, clearly. And, you know, I began the process, but as
All right. So this is a cool story too. What's that call like when they come over? Did they do the secret with the newspaper? We're like, hey, here, we're here to recruit you for the,
they don't recruit you. They called my room, obviously. And again, I did not, my cell phone wasn't used for that purpose. I would have gotten in a lot of trouble. So, you know, they called the landline in my room, and it was my roommate who actually answered.
That's an even better story. It's the CIA. They want to talk to you. I mean, what do you, you know, because there's a couple of agencies, if they ring your phone, you're like, and if someone else answers, it's actually great when they do, because of the look on their face.
Yeah. And you know, they called, and then you sort of begin the process, right? There's all these different hoops, I guess, you know, you could say that you sort of jump through, and then they have cuts, right? You know, at each of those hoops, very similar to the SEALs, I'm sure. And, you know, I made it through all of the hoops, I guess.
That is so awesome.
What was that? Was that scary? What was it? What was it? It's exciting, right? Exhilarating.
Frustrating, I think, would be the better.
Whole time?
No. Where it got frustrating is, and I talk about this in my book, the part where I almost quit, like stopped it, was the polygraph. I got really mad and like really annoyed. So I think that part was frustrating.
Good Lord, we were watching Meet the Parents the other day, and we were...
Oh, when he has to take the lie detector?
When he stumbles into freaking room, and he's stressing out to that lie detector. That's a great scene.
Yes.
I love it. The box is one thing altogether. It's just funny to watch people go. I mean, it's funny now. When back in the day when you get strapped up and you're young and you don't know anything, you got those moments of truth and everything. I forgot about all that, man. It is nerve-wracking. You're right. I'm sorry. I forgot you were going to have to go through that part.
I've never had to take a polygraph, but I have thought about if I would ever have to take one, and I get so nervous when anyone thinks I did something wrong. I'm sure my nerves would be like this, because it's almost like self-inflicted guilt. I don't know what that is about me, but I get so nervous when it comes to something like that, because I'm always like, they're going to think I did something just because I'm nervous. Is that how it was for you?
No, it was just very frustrating. Like all the questions, and it was frustrating.
Yeah. How long was it?
So the first one was about 8 hours. And then the second one was about 3.
Oh my gosh. I couldn't imagine being in a room 8 hours going through something like
that. It's like a day of school.
Yeah.
I know, when you think about it, it's like, how do you relate to that? It's like a day of school.
Just sitting there all day long. No breaks.
No breaks. Well, I'm
sure you get a bathroom break.
That's funny. All right. So when they call, from the time they call to the time you're activated is how long?
Oh, I mean, it was very short for me. It was like a year because my background didn't take a long time to do because I was so, so young, obviously. Right. You don't have a lot of skeletons in your closet.
Yeah.
And the ones you do in there, that's not the ones they care about. Doing dumb stuff as kids.
Partying in my sorority.
Oh, right. I mean,
drinking underage really wasn't something that they...
A lot of the stuff that the young kids that you worry about at that age, that's not the stuff they're looking for.
No, they didn't care.
At all. Matter of fact, they're really good at that stuff. Everybody I have worked with from the agency, man, they were professional at everything. And I mean everything.
Partying.
Yeah, they have a good time too, man. You got to.
Yeah, so your acceptance to the CIA, let's go from there.
Yeah.
I graduated college, May of 2000-ish, something like that. And then I EOD'd, a couple weeks later at the agency.
Yeah.
And I guess I got really lucky because I was put in the counterterrorism center. Yay.
And, but that's right before, still before... 2001.
I like to tell people I was there before it was cool.
It's a great way to
and
say
you know people are like, oh, you must have been amazing to get put there. I was like, no, that was where they put all the people that weren't good, because all the seasoned people were like the head of the Russia division.
Yeah,
you know. So
because you chased, we talk about that in the communities, like trying to chase something down. Like, I want to go in here. I want to try to, man, that's how you obviously you don't wind up getting it usually. All the guys we talk, we laugh about it. You can't chase those battles, man. You just kind of
let them come to you, I guess.
Yeah, they got to let them come to you, man. You get put in there, and it's usually in those environments where nothing was going down. That's the same way it was for us.
That's like you going into SDV when you first got in.
Yeah, yeah.
The last place he wanted to go was a division called SDV, and nowadays it's really hard to get into. People want to go into SDV.
I started out in special deliveries, which is the craziest thing. It's a hard because the attention was elsewhere. I came in 2002, right before that.
In 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I remember the transition going on too, all of it, and it happened fast. It's almost like there weren't any rules on us because we got hit. Man, they punched us. So guys are like, just go get them. Like, okay, roger that. Cool, man. We got you.
So what was that like pre-9/11 being in counterterrorism?
This is going to sound so strange. It was weirdly normal. You know, it was just like a normal work day, right? I was obviously waiting to go to the farm, because I was on the op side and you have to go to head. It's the reverse of the FBI. So CIA, you spend time at HQ first, then you go to the FBI. It was weirdly normal, right? You went to work, you came home. You went to work, you came home. Like, that was just what you did. And my job was to try to get as much information as possible on terrorist training camps. That was...
Were you at Langley?
I'm sorry?
Were you at Langley?
Mm-hmm.
Just cool. It's cool saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, it still is. That word just rolls out. Like, when you hear it, I don't care what you're like, oh.
So how does a young lady get information on terrorist training camps pre-9/11 when you don't even know what all of that really is? Are they prepping you and giving you assignments to go for, or are you just trying to figure things out yourself?
I think you're trying to figure things out as much as you can. I can't divulge too much about, sources and methods getting in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, we get it.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
But, it's interesting because I've served in, 13 different countries? And, I mean, most of them not ones that you would consider hospitable, to women. And I've never had a problem except for in one country, and it wasn't me. They were pissed off at our chief of station because they just took it out on me, And so I never had a problem.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
So tell us about the being in the trunk story then.
Oh, well, that's a ways into the career. So that would have been after September 11th.
Oh, okay.
That would have been.
I remember when that happened. I didn't, y'all, cause I had heard Osama bin Laden a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Not even really. And our main focus was, man, we weren't even on Russia either. We were on something completely different. But the day that happened, or the day after, like when everyone got unified, when those flags came mm-hmm. up and everything started moving, our organization and y'all's organization is when I got flooded, inundated with the money. And they was like, hey, man, you guys go and get it. And I remembered getting the intel, just like you said, because you'd read or watch a movie. Like, we try to watch a movie on something or read something on the country and how things are the way they are. And when we say we get intel, it's like, the best way to do that, imagine going and living in a neighborhood somewhere that you're not from and trying to learn the slang and just the vibe. Like, just trying to learn the vibe. Mm-hmm. Like, there's certain things, yeah, you can do them, but you don't, right? And that's what that was what we had to figure out. That takes a lot.
Yeah, it was weird, I guess, obviously, being at headquarters on September 11th in the counterterrorism center. I mean, we took a lot of crap for it, obviously. And, you know, we got blamed. And I think a lot of us feel like it's our fault. And, you know, it's not. I understand that. But, you know, you kind of go through all of that. Yeah. But there wasn't any time to, like, really be upset. And I had just been read into a program a week before September 11th that wasn't supposed to start until the spring of 2002. And then that started the next day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was, it was myself and two other guys. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
A lot. But it was fun, I guess. We were truly the tip of the spear, I guess, in terms of,
Yeah, three people.
I mean, everything had, I forgot about that. When that happened, everybody shifted their focus straight to y'all.
I can't say what the program is. They still won't let me, but yeah. It's in my book. Parts of it are redacted and it's called The Vault. But it was myself and two other guys. We were the very first people to actually work it, which is, like, now that I think about it, I don't think I fully understood what that meant at the time, obviously, but, yeah, we were definitely at the tip of the spear in terms of the war in Afghanistan. And I mean, the room we worked in was so small and the president, everyone was in there every day, all day. And it was just a lot.
That's a great story, actually.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Cause the cabbie, and a couple of my buddies and I were talking about this the other day. And like, you can watch this stuff that we did on TV, or you can read about it, but there's a missing element. That the chaos factor, when that's dropped on you, like when we have to go through that, and you're spun up, but when especially when everyone's activated, you can feel it. And that after over time, we got good at it. So that kind of mellowed down. We got our battle rhythm. But there was nothing like that first couple of years, man. It was just, I don't remember a lot of it.
I talk in my book a bit about December 2001, working that night on that program and having bin Laden in our sights, but not being able to do anything about it was really upsetting, say the least.
Oh, yeah.
Golly, that's crazy. We don't want to get you in trouble, so only say what you're totally comfortable with, and just know that we can edit say anything.
No, I know what I can. Writing a book is good, right? Because then I know what I can and can't.
Yeah.
But the whole bin Laden stuff, I do detail that, and that's been cleared by the agency.
Oh, yeah. Well, our people love hearing that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of those events that we've all gone through, like when everyone's involved, especially with this one and you, from the time you started it to the time we took them down.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, it was frustrating. And it's weird because the agency won't let me talk about the program in specific that I worked. But if you read the chapter, it's become, in my opinion, very clear what it was.
Sure.
Okay.
But it's whatever. If that's what makes them happy, then I'm fine with that.
Oh, yeah.
So what did your career end up looking like post 9/11?
Yeah, my career ended up looking really weird because we couldn't be gone at the farm for like 5 months because, hello, you know, we were the only ones that were there like pre-September 11th. And so my training was like really piecemeal, right? So I would go to defensive driving for 3 weeks and then come back and then go overseas and then go to like small arms training and then go back and then go overseas, right? Like because it was just, for them, it was just better, right? Which is completely fine. I enjoyed it. But after I stopped working that program, because we were working like 22 hours a day and they're just like, no, no more. It had been going on for like 4 months. And so they rotated us off. And then I got moved to a new group that was formed in the Counterterrorism Center because they formed all these different groups called CTC-WMD. And our bosses, so my boss was the chief of station Moscow.
Oh my gosh.
And so, really? Yeah, he was brought back.
Yeah, brought back. What do you think about that? Was he upset about it or was he?
No, he was the best boss I've ever had in my life. But it was just funny because now all of a sudden, you know, this Russia branch was so great, right? They brought them all back and moved them to counterterrorism. And he was just the most incredible boss I've ever had in my life. He was like absolutely fantastic. And so it was that was chaired by him, and his deputy was his deputy in Moscow station as well. But they had all been PNG'd when a guy named Robert Hansen leaked their names. And so they were all brought back to headquarters. And so from there, am I talking too much?
No, I'm sorry. No, we want you to talk. Keep talking. Yeah.
I mean, you got to get used to it. You're going to be doing it a lot. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point.
No, I worked CTC-WMD, and my job was mostly like crude toxins and poisons. Ricin, botulinum, anthrax, like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And my target was a guy named Zarqawi, who I also like to say I worked him before he was cool, because he went and founded, obviously, ISIS. But prior to that, he was one of the things bin Laden, I mean, I'm obviously not giving him credit, but one of the things he was like good at was creating franchises and branches of
real good at it.
You can give
them credit for that. You can give them credit for being good at that stuff because they're masterful at it.
Yeah.
And so Zarqawi was his poison. The two of them hated each other, but I think bin Laden was like, but you are good at stuff, so let me put you in charge of this. So obviously he became our enemy number one, I guess. Yeah. And so our job was to get as much information that we could from sources on him, any poison attacks that might be coming up. That was our job. So that meant going overseas and talking to people and doing so. That was my primary focus the whole time that I worked there.
Wow. I do remember when the anthrax thing was such a huge, like, everybody was scared to open a letter at one point.
Oh, that was right after September 11th.
Yeah, it was just because of 9/11, it was like, what's next? And it was thought to be the anthrax was next, that anyone could just get it in the post office. So they would say, don't lick the envelopes, you know, use those little envelope glue guns. And I remember that specifically. That was a huge deal for those younger than us that didn't experience that. It was a real fear. I don't know if it was a real threat, but it was a real fear. Huh?
Now that I think about it, it's like something new every year.
Yeah, but back then, think about it. Right after the bombings, it wasn't really a fear that they were going to hit more buildings. It was a fear that we were going to get poisoned somehow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good times.
So you went over there to research this, basically.
No, I went over there to recruit human assets to give us information and to gain information that I could from folks that we had already caught who might be able to tell us when the next attack was.
Did you get any information from women, or can you say that?
No, never from women.
Yeah, it was always men. And you would think that would be really hard because they do not respect women. Like,
they do. I think we have maybe a misconception of how they are portrayed in the media sometimes. And I mean, there's disrespectful people here, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the most disrespectful men to me have actually been here.
Yeah.
Not overseas, which is interesting.
Oh yeah. There's been a bad light shined on everybody. Actually, that war does that. War does that.
Yeah. I never had an issue ever. Not once. Like truly ever. And then I know that, I mean, this probably sounds terrible, but you know, if they did underestimate me or whatever, I use that to my advantage. That's not my problem. Like mm-hmm. that's their problem.
That's the best thing.
Yeah.
The more unassuming you are, the better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my job is to manipulate people to give me information. And so it worked well for me. God, I never had that issue.
First guy got a hold of me in y'all's profession. I sat down at lunch. Didn't even know what was happening, dude. I mean, by the end of it, I was eating fried chicken and be like, oh, my mother does this. You know, I was like, I was in uniform.
Gotcha.
And he was the best dude. And he had, you know, he's just so happy, right? He had the best smile on his face, man.
Much like
he just kind of, you know, y'all are real good at that.
I never had, like, I worked with SEAL Team 6 a lot, you know, what I was doing. And
are you the one that got the rosary?
No.
Okay, just checking.
They were always so amazing to me. And I mean, I never had issues, like ever, with men, ever. In any culture.
The interrogation. My dad always said, if you want to get something out of somebody, just get them drunk. They'll tell you whatever. They like you, they'll tell you what you want. They hate you, they'll tell you that. They'll tell you everything.
That's true.
He could get some information out of some folks. But I'm going to beat the hell out of people. I mean, SEALs waterboard ourselves with alcohol, like with tequila and stuff, just for fun. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that happen before with us. We do some crazy stuff. Anything we do to the bad guys, we do to ourselves for fun. But yeah, the best way is the unassuming. Like laugh it out in conversation.
They were great. I really had no issues, like ever.
That's cool. All right, go ahead. You got two, so on the desk of Bin Laden and Zarqawi.
So I stopped sort of focusing on Bin Laden when I was moved to the WMD group. And then obviously my focus at that point was Zarqawi because there was another group working Bin Laden.
Oh.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Sure. It was all.
I remember that when the WMT, I was on one of those teams. Mm-hmm. When we first came out, when I was first over, some of my primary missions were for y'all.
Was that in Iraq?
Yes, ma'am.
So I didn't work Iraq.
Oh, okay. We were searching.
Those were two different groups. The counter-proliferation group is what worked WMD in Iraq. We worked terrorists who were using it. So we're talking more North Africa, Afghanistan, and some other Middle Eastern places. Everywhere but Iraq. We did not work Iraq.
So you got full benefit then.
I've never been to Iraq.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Then you got full benefit because Northern Iraq and Afghanistan, man, that's hard territory.
I can't unfortunately say what countries I went to.
I get it. No, I get
Which
it. There's
is
no
such
problem
a
with that,
bummer,
man. I can tell when that happens. When I'm trying to say, ask you something, you're like, I'm like, damn, all right,
so
shift.
Because I was on the offside,
I get
I
it. No, I'm sorry.
You know, when I went overseas, which is a bummer.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell us what you can about the next step. So after Zarqawi, where'd you go from there?
Are you getting pretty senior now? Are you getting to choose your destinations after this? Or is this still,
still
going?
If you were in the counterterrorism center, you were not, it didn't matter if you were like a branch chief, like you were not like picking.
Yeah, just wherever you need to go.
You know, where you go. But yes, I was like a pre-manager, I think at that point. But I made a decision and I always think that it was like a super mature decision to leave because I loved it there. Like I said, I loved my boss. I loved my colleagues. I had lots of awards. I was being promoted so quickly, you know, like I have nothing bad to say about my job there, but I didn't want to live overseas anymore. I was totally burnt out, which I mean, given the work we were doing is kind of expected.
So are you married by now?
I'm sorry?
Were you married?
No. Mm-mm.
Single life, right?
I got married pretty late.
Okay. So yeah, single life while you were in though, right?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. And so I made the decision that I loved the counterterrorism like mission. And so I wanted to work, you know, in one place and stay kind of stateside. And so that's when I made the decision to become a special agent at the FBI. So I left the CIA on like a Friday and I reported to Quantico on Monday.
Oh my gosh. All right.
So is that as easy as shifting in the military or is there some more difficulty behind that? You can just walk away from the other one. Did you let them know that was happening or what?
Of course. You know, I left under, like I said, I mean, they gave me an award the day I left, as well as a money bonus. Like, I mean, the CIA could not have been more supportive of me. They were not happy, obviously, to see me like go. Mm-hmm. I'm still friends with all of my colleagues, you know, to this day. But I mean, I think they understood the reasons and that it was never going to change. Like, that's what the CIA does, right? And so I wasn't trying to like escape a boss or something like that. It was just,
I know, but we have some guys that were in the Marine Corps that came over into the SEAL teams. It's just tough, especially if you're squared away. Mm-hmm. Like, so if you're real squared away, you're usually your units won't let you go. But if you're a shitbag, then they don't want to send you to the other side. You know what I'm talking about? It's like a happy medium.
So I don't think I was a shitbag, but maybe I was.
No.
CIA.
I didn't say that.
CIA and FBI are two different organizations, right? And so they don't have a choice. Like, if you want to leave, you can leave, mm-hmm. right? And so I made, like I said, the decision to leave, but I mean, CIA is an intelligence collection organization. That is what they do overseas, period, the end. That is their mission. That is how they were set up. The FBI is a law enforcement organization in the United States. That's their mission. That's how they were set up. Those are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the two agencies completely. Really hate each other.
Absolutely.
They hate each other?
Absolutely.
Well, I was naive and didn't understand it because we had two agents detailed to the Counterterrorism Center when I was there, Doug and Mark. And Doug and Mark were actually awesome and worked really well with all of us, right? And so I had a mentality that everyone would be like Doug and Mark, right? Because I just assumed, I mean, that they're what I met of the Bureau.
Right.
Right. And so that's what I assumed.
And it wasn't like that
Alabama,
when you got there.
Auburn. I mean, it's a competition. It's, I don't know, especially in the beginning. Everyone was vying with us. When you would go in, everyone was vying for something. They were trying to get their place. And then once you got in there, then you had to establish yourself. You'd be surprised. But then the best is when we're away from the flagpole and you get guys out there from different agencies. Man, we wouldn't even know that. They just stick us in there in civilian clothes. No one identified themselves. You just knew their name. Even if you knew their damn name. We know people for 30 years don't even know their name. They're just call signs and nicknames. But I mean the best people. The best people, absolutely.
So what was FBI like?
Pretty horrible.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, I think part of the problem, I guess this goes back to leadership, right? And management style. Like I said, at the agency, I had nothing but remarkable bosses and leaders. But then at the Bureau, the head of the academy did not like the fact that I was from the agency at all, and made my life a living hell. He put me, for every scenario we had in Hogan's Alley, I had to be the leader for everything, like made my life a living hell. But I passed every test. You know, a lot of people are like, why didn't you just quit? And I'm like, that's not going to happen. I think he had, so there were six women in my class, which that's not weird to me. Like I said, I'd been the only girl like so many times. I definitely don't care. But I am hyper feminine. That's just who I am. It doesn't mean I can't shoot a gun and pass all the PT tests, but I have long blonde hair. I like fashion. I wear makeup. Like if you don't like that, that's a you problem, like not a me problem. But he had a big problem with that. Like had a huge problem with that. And the amount of sexual harassment that I underwent was pretty bad, but I refused to quit. I mean, why would I do that? You know?
So that make you tough?
What?
That make you tough?
I think I've always been, you know, if you look at the agency and what I did there.
I get that, but I'm just asking, that didn't help you at all?
Like, did it just help you even more?
Like
just
now, if you had to go back and be an instructor and you had somebody bitching and complaining about going through something after you went through the worst parts of it yourself, like you and passed it and took it, no matter what they were throwing at you to throw you off your game. And it's a little sexual harassment from somebody throws you off your game. You've been overseas. You know what? They're worse.
They're not, though. That's the thing.
I'm talking about if you get hemmed up. I've been there.
Yeah.
You can stick up for them all you want, but I know what happens sometimes. And when some girls, if they're not used to that, and that's all it takes to throw them off their game, I'm not saying he was right. I'm just saying that if it's a possibility that it can happen to you and you get trained in it, when you and successfully made it through it like you did, turn around if you ever have to be an instructor.
The difference was, is like, look, I've been around men who were making so many inappropriate jokes and so many inappropriate, but it was never like mean and vicious and vindictive, like ever. I just more thought it was funny and just like literally carried on with my day.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm not hypersensitive to that stuff at all. I've never been. This was different.
Yeah.
This was, you'll be a good agent on your knees under my desk.
Oh,
this
shit.
Was, yeah. We don't like the way you look in your pants. It makes us uncomfortable. Can you write a letter apologizing for the way you look? That's super different than like an inappropriate like sex joke. Do you see? Like,
no, I get it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There is a difference, 100%.
Sure. And I had never experienced that with the guys before. Like in the past, it was just all like jokes and whatever. Like it was, I don't know. It was just, it wasn't that.
Sure. That's how you can tell somebody gets in that didn't earn that position.
Yeah.
Like the guy.
So did he get in trouble or did you file any complaints with him? No.
I should have, obviously. You know, I look back and I should have. But I graduated and I went to the LA field office, to the Santa Ana resident agency. And they didn't put me in counterterrorism there. They put me working Chinese counterintelligence.
Wait, what year is this?
2005.
Okay.
And I liked it a lot. It was really fun, but the sexual harassment continued. And I think I had just become like so numb to it that I told my dad a few things that some of the people had said, and that's when he was just like, "You need to leave." Like, and that's when I quit.
So
I guess I'm a quitter.
So no, not at all. No. So
hey, this team never quit. Don't worry about it. It's not what that is at all.
So you experienced it from different people within the bureau. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same guy that was doing it when you first went in.
Nope.
That's so crazy.
Bureau's going through some tough times.
Yeah.
Like. Look, and I can only talk about my lived experience, right? Like not every agent there is like that. Like that's truly, you know, not, but I liked the work I did, but it made me realize that we have some work to do. That's when I sort of got into teaching. I went and got my master's in education and I started teaching. But what I started realizing was that the young ladies had a lot of questions about my career. So I started the first class for high school students on national security, foreign policy, and law enforcement. And then I started teaching at an all-girls school. And my class became full every single year. So I started having to add more and more and more and more sections of it. And now I've had over 60 girls go into these careers, military,
oh my gosh,
CIA,
awesome.
FBI, Homeland Security. And to me, that's my way of like, I guess, not quitting and making a difference is that, look, I've had these two careers. One of the ways that we can enact change is by exposing more women to these careers and showing them how they can have them and maybe sort of leveling out the gender narrative a little bit.
That's amazing that you do that.
That's a bit, it's almost as if we're transitioning out of that world into the teaching world. It feels right.
Well, so the FBI taught, this is what I say. CIA taught me what I want to teach. FBI taught me who I want to teach. That's how I view it.
And what, life taught you how to teach it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, we had to road test this.
When we went in, I remember when all this kicked off, it was like an uncertainty. I mean, we knew what to do in the situation, but like we didn't know what the situation that was going to present itself.
So of we course, had to you step, never do.
Yeah, you never do, right? That's the surprise. And then over time, you just get battle tested in that over and over again until you get that repetitive motion. And then teaching it back to the kids. I think the cool part was learning the little tricks in between. Like, instead of you having to get your ass kicked like this over and over again, I'm just going to tell you this is how it goes down. And I can give you an example of it now. And I, there's so much value in that.
I think there's so much value in it. And I think too, like, yeah, I am a tough cookie, but I've always been a tough cookie. I mean, like, I was bullied. I have parents who are like definitely no nonsense people, right? Like, this is just how I was raised. Yeah. Right. And so I think part of it is that those careers agreed with me because like, that's who I am. I'm not like a kid gloves kind of person who gets my feelings hurt, you know, easily.
So
but that's just
things,
who I am. Right.
And so you address too?
That's okay. But it's, I don't know. I guess I found my passion and my calling now.
I think it's powerful. Yeah. I mean, you said it earlier when you were growing up because you thought you were weak. And I mean, the ones that don't look like they're supposed to be in that part, they can teach you. I mean, with some, all right. The best is when you know somebody and then you're kind of sitting there and you hear something in conversation about them, it completely changes the way you look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah,
if you and I and just haphazardly were sitting around somewhere and I didn't know, maybe I'm talking about without conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look over and she's like, oh, that's the girl that worked the desk for when terrorism, you just start kicking up and the whole, you know, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? I mean, of course you are.
Sometimes that sucks because people will say, oh, you're just a teacher. You know, like you're just a teacher. But I almost feel like then I have to like front load the other two things I did sometimes.
Oh, get over that now. That's an ego messing with you.
Yeah.
There. Come on.
You don't
do that too.
I don't. But that's why I actually never mention them because then as a female, like a lot of times people don't want to be my friend because it's very off-putting to them. Like what I used to do.
Because you're more badass
than
they
are. I'm in this weird place, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think you're incredible.
Yeah, so how do you play it? I mean, you are a CIA operative. You can go undercover, right? You don't tell anybody. You should be really good at that.
That is very true.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. You're the best trained thing we got down here. If you can't get that done, we're in trouble.
It's super true.
I think everything you've done is super admirable, and whether you say it or not to, you know, whoever you're talking to and they think you're just a teacher, what you've been through comes out.
Yeah, you got to see. We have to see that.
The actions
come
out.
There has to be one person that goes through that. And you got chosen. I mean, there has to be a pillar. If you're going to set one so everyone can follow to have something to identify. That we were talking about that the other day with one of our kids. I was like, so do you want to have the written word down or something to look at? Remember that? Or just to try. I was like, man, if you have something you can identify. Like, man, she went through that. She took that. Not only that, man, she can teach it back to you. That's important for sure.
Well, yeah, I think one also too, I'm trying to help. I mean, yes, I teach, but I'm also, I don't know if people realize this, but if you're CIA, you are not privy to the same kinds of benefits that veterans are because you're not considered a veteran, right? And so like they don't get mental health care and they don't get, it's really sad. And so I actually had a little bit of success. I randomly in a shot in the dark emailed my Senator Cornyn's office.
Oh yeah.
He's one of my senators. And they've had like Zoom meetings with me twice to sort of like discuss this issue. And so it's, I mean, it matters to me, right? Because I think there's a lot of folks that went through stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, okay. I'm fortunate. I'm in a financial position that we can pay like to go to counseling or, you know, whatever it is you need to do. But they don't get mental health care and that sucks.
Well, especially
that.
If you're putting young girls into this, you know, path, right. You want them right. to be taken care of.
Of course.
And so course. That's awesome that you're taking the time to even make that change or try to make that change with our government when you know what they need. And if they don't have it, you can help get it for them.
Trying. I don't know how much success I'll have, but you know, who knows?
Our Texas boys be able to swing that. They better be able to, especially for those who got attached to us. Like if you're CIA and you got attached to us and those guys and girls that did, they got busted up bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real bad.
We did.
And there ought to be that little 70s and 80s babies little venture right there. You can just push them in there because there's one team, one fight.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Well, I know we've had you for an hour now, but I want to hear the trunk story if you can tell it.
Oh, yes. The trunk
I'm
story.
Sorry
about
the
trunk
that. Story.
yes. The trunk story. I was on my way to debrief a terrorist. I'll use it in that language. Mm-hmm. And typically when we would drive in this particular country, it's not a good idea for women to be in the car, even though I covered, you know, completely. It's just not a good idea. And particularly the guy that I was with, like, there just really wasn't any way of making it seem like he wasn't a white dude. Like, right. I mean, yeah, he had red hair, fair skin. I mean, it just wasn't.
White.
No, yeah. He's an amazing guy. Yeah, right. Love him. Just wasn't a way to do that. And so he put me in the trunk, like, to get from, like, where our particular little station camp was set up to where we needed to go. And he was like trying to talk to me, but I couldn't hear him like through the truck. So we stopped the car on the side of the road in a place where like no one could see us, got out, opened up the trunk just a little bit, kind of knelt down and was trying to like tell me what to expect in meeting with this particular terrorist. So, you know, it was a meeting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Removing the environment, it was completely normal. It was completely normal.
In the environment, it was completely normal.
Completely normal. Throw the environment in there now, and that changes everything.
Oh my gosh. That's so crazy.
That's the trunk meeting that I had.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for sharing your story. So how can we help you? Can you tell people how they can get your book and what you're doing now?
Yeah, help you, support you, all
that. So you can get my book anywhere, you know, Amazon, any of those big places. And then I started an open Instagram page, The Unexpected Spy, where I sort of take my teaching and I take like complex national security and foreign policy issues. I think, not to be too blunt, I'm really sick of like the political slant on a lot of these issues. So I try to take the issues, I boil them down to 1 minute, and I explain to the audience, like, this is what this means, or this is what this is, in very apolitical, quick fashion, so you can get your news like that way. So I started that. I don't have that many followers, but you know, I try.
I follow you. Yeah. I love it. And that's why I reached out to you, because I love having non-biased news.
I don't know any place to really get it. So I just thought, well, I'll just break. And then some people got mad at me because I did post about like Mar-a-Lago, but like I had to, it was in the news. I don't know what you want me to do. Right. And so then I just like broke it down. This is what classification means. This is what, you know, just to try to.
That's what I was going to ask you. You don't even have to put this in here, but if you had like your own app or YouTube channel that said The Accident or The Unexpected Spy, I'd subscribe to it. Like, if you just got up on there and taught people a tradecraft, how to be a spy.
Someone told me to do that, but I don't know how to do that.
Woman, you're the only one who knows how to do that. I mean, yeah, it's just be yourself. Like, hey, when I wake up in the morning, this is my first thing. Talk about reflections and how to walk,
really?
How to be. Oh,
yes.
Are you kidding me? It's like they don't know how to.
People would care.
And it's the stuff that you overlook. Well, this is the stuff they want. The stuff that you think's not important. And it's like, oh, that's not a big deal. I'm telling you, that's the fun stuff.
I know you get it.
If you focused on the apolitical, just like how you did the Mar-a-Lago thing, I saw all of that post. And Kara can help you. I'm offering Kara's help. Kara can help you.
I'll be a friend.
You know, I am, and I guess you guys get like 4 to 78. Like, I think I'm decent with technology, but I'm not that good.
Well, here's the deal now. The best part about it is the no tech.
Yeah.
Is that little? You have those skills that you can't even imagine. They're not. You can't even tap into them until you're out long enough. That's another thing too, because you're still. Focused so hard on that, and
also you're not allowed
backing out to get that done. And now.
Yeah.
No, I don't even know what that was, but
it was Kara. Her voice is coming. Your voice is coming through really soft.
Oh, sorry.
Sure, man, that would be. Oh, be awesome.
Kara can help you start a YouTube.
Inspired.
I'll be your first member. I mean,
yes.
If I saw that, I'd be like, I got to see what this is. And then if you showed up, I'd be like, I'm going to teach you how to be a.
There is another, it's actually one of our friends, and her husband was a teammate of Marcus's. She was with Fox News for a long time, and then she decided to become a full-time mom. But she started an online platform of very non-biased news called Smart Her News, H-E-R News. And I do want that in there. I want to give her that plug.
You don't have to do anything you want to, but I'm just saying, like, if you got up there, just because of what you can teach and what you've been through, and experience is experience. And just talking about, like, from the academies, from the FBI to CIA, the difference in that. Like, if a man says this to you, this is how you react.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about that all the time. It's like, put them in a scenario, then give them three options. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we have them. You have you can play out a million options in your head every time a scenario would focus in on itself, and we just got better and better at it.
Yeah.
And it's, you can't see that because you're still really focused on that, but that's the brilliance in what you've done over your life. And
I think I'll do it. I don't know
how
I'm
going
to do it.
I think you should do it.
You should totally do it.
Right? Kara said she'll help. Kara's
right,
social media.
Right comes in threes, you know,
you have three subscribers.
Yes.
Yeah, right here. So now that I know how close you are to us, you're definitely doing this. You understand me?
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And we will promote your Instagram and your book and your new YouTube channel.
Yeah, I'm going to get myself one.
You already got the greatest name for it. I mean, it just writes itself.
Right. If it's not already taken.
Oh, we'll find whoever that is and scare the mess out of
you. Make sure you get it, like, today before this releases.
We'll do that for you, girl. Don't worry.
Well, thank you all so much.
Yes, ma'am. Bless you. Have a great day.